Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Look at President Trump's results in his first term. If people are looking for certainty, they should look at the record of this president. That's why the American people reelected him back to this office.
White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt on Tuesday on what the administration needs.
And look at everything that President Trump has already done and his team has already done in just 51 days. The massive efforts to deregulate, tax cuts, which we need Congress to pass the Trump economic agenda, the Trump tax cuts, which will unleash economic growth. And the president also addressed this directly, I will point out as well, when you look at what he said on Air Force One. And he said he wants the American people to have so much money in their pockets they don't even know what to do with it. That's the intent of this administration, and we're working very hard every day on that goal.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
It's been an interesting debate. There's been a lot of things said that are exaggerations. A lot of things said, in my view, they're fabrications. Let's talk about a few of those.
The House debating a continuing resolution. Oklahoma Representative Tom Cole.
There's nothing in this bill about Social Security. There's nothing in this bill about Medicare. There's nothing in this bill about Medicaid. There aren't cuts in nutrition for the poor. There's a $500 million increase in WIC at the request of the president. There's not cuts in housing. There's an increase in housing to try and adjust for inflation. We'd have been better off probably if we'd negotiated a deal, but that didn't happen. So proactive thing. There's more money in here to take care of junior enlisted personnel. I don't think that's probably an article of much dispute. It certainly shouldn't be. And I can go charge by charge. Yes, on the toxic exposure fund, we're going to deal with that in the 26 bill. It's for 26. Everything's funded for 25. That's what this bill covers. It's an appropriations bill for FY25. So that's what we're covering here. We're going to deal with the 26 bill, and then we'll deal with that issue. I voted for the PAC Act. I believe in it. I voted for additional funding for it. I suspect we'll find common ground there. So there's a lot of fireworks around this bill. Let's just talk about what it does. It's pretty simple, guys. It's a CR. It's a continuing resolution. Your own leadership came out against it before they ever saw it. Maybe that's why we have all these fabrications and hallucinations about what's in it. It's pretty short. It's 99 pages. Read it. Now, I'm sorry everybody didn't get their projects. I really am sorry about that. We don't do that in CRs. So the big cuts here are mostly the elimination of congressional projects. I think most of those are worthy. I support them. I actually support the reform some of my friend, the good friend, the ranking member, put in there. I think she did a great job for that for this institution. But we can't do them in a CR. We just don't do them. So people are upset about that. I'm sorry about that. But at the end of the day, there's only one important thing that matters here. You can vote yes and keep the government open. Whatever your problem is, whatever your concern is, it's going to be worse in a government shutdown, not better, worse. So whatever you're worried about, shutting down the government is not the answer to your concern. You're only going to make it worse. Keeping the government open is the right thing to do. I wish we could have gotten a deal. But we're not going to sit here and concede the executive authority of a Republican president because it upsets you. Not going to happen. We made that crystal clear, and I think that was the biggest thing. It wasn't a top-line number. We basically got to a top-line number. So we're here, and the government shutdown is 4 days away. So if you want to vote no and shut down the government in 4 days if you succeed, that's your choice. I respect every member's vote. I've never voted for government shutdown. I've always voted to reopen the government. I don't like government shutdowns. I don't think they work. I think you will find if you succeed in shutting down the government, that it won't work very well for you either. It never works. But actually, this body will not have the final say. It's going to go to the United States Senate, and you have the power in the Senate to shut down the government if you choose, because they have a filibuster over there. They have 60 votes. So if you're worried about it, just let it go over there. You've got the power in that body to do it. So with that, Mr. Speaker, I would just suggest we set aside the rhetoric and the intense feelings and just do the right thing. And the right thing is to vote yes and keep the government open.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
And the number now is a bit more dour. This board's a year out of date.
Arizona Representative David Schweikert on the economy and debt.
Do you see the blue portion? Okay, this year, this fiscal year, it's about 25% of all the spending is in the blue. That's what we get to vote on. That's military. That's what we call non-defense discretionary. We borrow about, let's see, last year for every dollar we took in taxes, we spent $1.39. So functionally, 39 cents. This year it will be a little better. We think it will be only 36 cents for every dollar we take in taxes. So what that basically means is everything you and I as a member of Congress vote on is borrowed. But we have this reconciliation budget. It's the one of the few times where we actually get to talk a little bit about what's in the red. But we don't get to touch net interest. You know, interest is interest. And some of the math coming in right now says interest this year, this fiscal year, could be about 1.1 to 1.2. I actually am a bit more dour. $1 trillion, making interest functionally the second highest expense in the federal government. You know, until this reconciliation budget makes it through defenses like number four on spending. So Social Security, interest, functionally Medicare, defense. But when you take a look at what we're even allowed to talk about in a reconciliation budget, and you know why we do the reconciliation budget, it's so we can get around the 60-vote rule in the Senate. So we're doing all this dancing and stuff because of the Senate rules. But we can't touch net interest, and we're not allowed to go near Social Security. So think about that. That area on that last chart I just showed you that was red, the majority of it we're not even allowed to talk about. We can't touch it. We can't do anything about it. So when you see the authorizations, that's actually why committees like Ways and Means and Energy and Commerce have such a lift. So what happens if I come to you and start to say, you have a country that's binging on debt? You know, we're in extraordinary measures right now, so some of the daily debt calculations are a little screwed up. But before we went into extraordinary measures, we were in the $60,000, $70,000 per second. Every day, every second. If my math is correct and we come in at about $2.2 trillion, maybe $2.3 trillion of borrowing this year, you got to start thinking about that. So we take in about $5 trillion in tax receipts. We're going to spend about $7 trillion, meaning about 7.25% of the entire economy is borrowed this year. And if we don't get our act together, in nine budget years, it could be 9.2% of the entire economy is borrowed. And I was just wanted to make the point, because I'd come here in the past, interest rates have fallen dramatically in the last couple of weeks, which, remember the seesaw. We've talked about the seesaw. When the economy is really strong, or there's a shortage of capital to borrow, interest rates go up, meaning the United States, we pay a lot more in debt servicing. When interest rates go down, that typically means the expectations, the economy are slowing down, meaning our tax receipts fall. So the middle of the seesaw stays the same. I saw some people getting giddy. Look, interest rates are down. It also means actually some of our modeling in the future quarters of tax receipts also are starting to fall now. So there's no free option anymore.
Arizona Representative David Schweikert, you're listening to Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Farm Credit Mid-America is a customer-owned lending cooperative and a proud part of the Farm Credit System.
Testifying before a Senate Ag Committee, Tara Durbin, Chief Lending Officer for Farm Credit Mid-America in Louisville.
We serve more than 145,000 customers in Arkansas, Indiana, Kentucky, Missouri, Ohio, and Tennessee. Together with 55 other Farm Credit Associations, we are committed to supporting rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit. Over the past several months, this committee has heard from producers and industry experts about the challenges emerging in the agriculture economy. It is important for me to highlight that we are, in fact, seeing a tale of two worlds when it comes to the financial health of American agriculture. The factors that most commonly determine which farm economy is being felt include geographic region, commodity produced, farm diversification, and financial position. I've provided more in my written testimony, so I will just briefly describe the financial conditions that we are seeing. Row crop producers are facing headwinds. However, those in corn, soybeans, and wheat have benefited from several years of being able to build liquidity and reinforce their financial positions. Our cotton and rice producers, particularly our Arkansas customers, have faced multiple years of price volatility, quality concerns, and yield challenges, leading to more rapid liquidity erosion. The protein sector is a bit of a bright spot as it benefits from strong demand, limited supply, and lower feed costs. We are committed to working with our customers as current conditions are placing financial strain on many farmers regardless of age or experience in farming. Like other farm credit associations, we utilize several practices to work with producers through challenging cycles. These include proactively restructuring debt to support cash flow concerns, providing financial coaching and education, and using federal programs like crop insurance and the FSA loan guarantee program to mitigate risk. Before I discuss the Farm Bill, I would like to recognize the importance of the assistance provided in the American Relief Act that was enacted late last year and championed by many on this committee. As we look to the future, American farmers must have certainty and predictability of a strong five-year farm bill with additional federal investment that reflects today's market reality. My written testimony identifies a detailed list of farm credit priorities in supporting the next farm bill, and I would like to briefly mention two that are particularly relevant for this hearing. First, crop insurance is the cornerstone of the farm safety net and one of the most important risk mitigation tools available to our farmers. We support the strongest possible crop insurance program, and we applaud the committee for exploring ways to enhance this vital tool to improve affordability and coverage. Second, the FSA loan guarantee program allows lenders to make loans to farmers who may not qualify for traditional credit. This tool is not only important for lenders when financial conditions in agricultural economy become more challenging, but also helpful when working with young and beginning producers. We thank Ranking Member Klobuchar and Senator Hoeven for their work on the PACE Act, which will provide critical updates to the FSA loan program by aligning the current cost of operating a farm with the loan limits.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
First of all, when it comes to the stock market, the numbers that we see today, the numbers we saw yesterday, the numbers we saw we'll see tomorrow are a snapshot of a moment in time.
White House Press Secretary Caroline Levitt.
We are in a period of economic transition. We are in a period of transition from the mess that was created under Joe Biden in the previous administration. Joe Biden left this country in an economic disaster. Several statistics to point out. The delinquency rate on credit card loans increased 63% under Joe Biden, hitting a near 12-year high. Under Joe Biden, all net job growth went to foreign-born Americans. Real wages declined by 1.5% under Joe Biden. And as we all know, and this administration continues to combat, prices soared more than 20% under Joe Biden because of his reckless spending and economic policies. So we are in a period of transition from that economic nightmare under a president who had no idea what he was doing, never held a private sector job in his life, into a golden age of American manufacturing under a businessman and a deal maker in chief in President Donald J. Trump, who will be implementing, is implementing, the formula that we know works.
One reporter commenting, retirement accounts are getting rocked.
Well, I'm glad you brought up workers, because that's exactly who President Trump is looking out for with his America First trade policy and his America First economic agenda. And if you look at, there's great indication to be optimistic about where the economy stands. And the American people, investors, CEOs, small business owners, but most importantly, workers, should bet on President Trump, because his tariff policies, what he envisions is reciprocity, fair trade practices where American workers are put first and are no longer ripped off by foreign countries all over this world.
It's neither free nor fair trade.
The president is, again, responding to the fact that Canada has been ripping off the United States of America and hardworking Americans for decades. If you look at the rates of tariffs across the board that Canadians have been imposing on the American people and our workers here, it is egregious. In fact, I have a handy dandy chart here that shows not just Canada, but the rate of tariffs across the board. If you look at Canada, since you brought it up, American cheese and butter, nearly 300% tariff. You look at India, 150% tariff on American alcohol. You think that's helping Kentucky bourbon be exported into India? I don't think so. 100% tariff on agricultural products from India. Look at Japan tariffing rice, 700%. President Trump believes in reciprocity, and it is about dang time that we have a president who actually looks out for the interests of American businesses and workers. And all he's asking for at the end of the day are fair and balanced trade practices. And unfortunately, Canada has not been treating very fairly at all over the past several decades.
And it's for rural America.
Just think about what the tariff policy long-term will do for our country. I think many of us probably grew up in small towns. I know at least I did, and the main street in my small town looks a heck of a lot worse than it probably did decades ago before I was alive. At least my parents and grandparents tell me so. And I know many Americans feel that same way. What the president envisions for this country is for the United States of America to be a manufacturing superpower, where there are American factories and businesses owned by Americans producing goods that we are exporting to the rest of the world. Those revenues will stay here. It will increase wages for people here in our great country. It will ensure our national security, and it will boost the morale of the American people to have thriving industries again. Think about Detroit, Michigan. Think about North Carolina, as I mentioned, that used to have a thriving furniture industry that no longer exists because of the globalist trade policies of previous and past administrations. And the American people gave the president a tremendous opportunity to restore American greatness and restore our manufacturing dominance, and he's intent on doing just that.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
You've seen some of the discussions. Ray Dalio has been out there talking about the heart attack of debt and what happens to other countries and the history of that. Going back, you know, I think he's in his book, he's going back a couple thousand years.
Arizona Representative David Schweikert.
United States. So here's functionally the world borrowing. China's borrowing about 17% of what we call the available capital for sovereign borrowing. Japan's borrowing about 10%. We're borrowing 40%. So we're about 25% of the world's GDP, but we're borrowing 40% of the money that goes to sovereigns. Gotta understand that the scale, the binging on debt. When I get to the very last board, I'm gonna show again the chart that just seems to upset people, but it's math. From today through the next 30 years, discretionary spending actually, according to CBO's 30-year model, actually ends up with sort of, it grows slower than tax receipt. But it's Social Security and Medicare. It's demographics. It's not Republican. It's not Democrat. It's demographics. Where it becomes partisan is the unwillingness to tell truth about the math, and then actually the creativity of how we disrupt the cost. So how do you actually find some of these things? This chart's a little awkward. I would have designed it a little different, but sometimes you're running around. The point we're trying to make is, here was the effective interest in 2014 to the United States. Now all of a sudden we're up here, and the actual market rate we expect in the future to actually continue to consume, meaning interest is our great fragility in this country. I've told the comment many times, at our current rate of borrowing, we've almost put the bond market in charge of this country. Because if you have to bring hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars to market every month, you screw with your banker. And many ways, that bond market now is our banker. For my brothers and sisters on the left, who often want to attack the tax reform of 2017, attack tax receipts, I've done presentation after presentation behind this microphone using the stuff from the Manhattan Institute that basically shows if we do all the Democrats' tax hikes and then do the economic adjustments, often from Democrat groups, you get about 1.5% of GDP in new tax receipts. Okay, maybe we're going to be pushed against the wall and have to do that, but we're borrowing over 7% of GDP. So it's like on Social Security. It's common that the refrain is, well, just raise the cap. Okay. In 2033, Social Security Trust Fund is empty. Our brothers and sisters on Social Security will take 17 to 20% cut. We double senior poverty in America. And when someone says, well, just raise the cap, our model is in that next year, 2034, raising the cap only covers about 38% of the shortfall, and you've wiped out the cash and the other things you actually need to also save Medicare, which actually that trust fund runs out like 3 years later. So one of the reasons for this chart is trying to demonstrate something very simple. Back when, before TCJA, the 2017 tax reform, the actual projection of what tax receipts would be, so before the tax changes, we're right on track. You see the weird blip there? That was the remarkable amount of spending that happened during the pandemic. We actually just went back to nominal. So what happens here? What happens when there's this intense, intense hunger to play this weird blame game instead of being willing to tell our voters the truth? The vast majority of debt this decade will be interest and health care costs, mostly Medicare.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
This hearing is the third in a series of our committee is conducting to examine the current state of America's rural economy from the perspective of our farmers, ranchers, lenders, and rural leaders.
Chairman of the Senate Ag Committee from Arkansas, John Bozeman.
Having time to reflect on what we have heard in the previous two hearings, it's clear to me that a common theme has emerged. If we expect current and future generations of producers to not only survive, but thrive, we need to pass a strong five-year farm bill this year that strengthens the farm safety net and revitalizes rural communities, many of which are struggling to retain an adequate workforce to feed, fuel, and clothe the next generation of Americans. More than 70% of all counties in this country are rural, and agriculture is the number one industry in a large majority of those rural areas. While there are numerous valuable rural development programs in the Farm Bill that many of us on this committee champion, the most potent mechanisms for rural development are the risk management tools that our producers utilize to secure the financing necessary to grow and expand their operations, which in turn support the communities they call home. The economic activity generated by agriculture, the sector in rural communities supports everything from local retail operations that supply inputs such as feed, seed, fertilizer, and fuel to the grain mills, cotton gins, or other processing facilities that provide direct employment opportunities for local residents. Local governments count on that tax base to provide critical services and infrastructure needed to keep communities healthy and vibrant. Unfortunately, every member of this committee has heard directly from farmers in their state about the very difficult conditions they've endured over the past several years and are likely to face in the future if things continue the way that they are. While many of us have heard from ag groups for years now about the importance of getting a farm bill signed into law, I noticed a distinct change in tone beginning last summer as I visited with not just producers but also their lenders. One banker in Arkansas then estimated that producers could struggle to secure financing for planting roughly 20% of the acres in my home state. Unfortunately, tough times are nothing new for our nation's farmer. They have endured many challenges before, but we've entered a scenario in which many economic indicators of the health of the agriculture sector, especially for row crops, are headed in the wrong direction and have been doing so for some time now. The $10 billion in economic assistance provided at the end of last year is a critical bridge for many farmers to secure 2025 operating loans. I appreciate the work of many members of this committee in securing this assistance and look forward to swift implementation by Secretary Rollins and the department. However necessary to ensure many farms stayed in operation for the upcoming year, this economic assistance should not in any way be considered a substitute for a five-year farm bill. Whether you look at rising levels of farm debt, loan delinquency rates, or the percent of row crop farmers that need to refinance debt to cash flow, it's clear that Congress needs to act quickly to strengthen the farm bill programs. The suite of risk management tools should provide a critical backstop for producers and ensure adequate credit access for all generations of farmers, but especially our young and our beginning farmers who we are counting on to carry on the honorable work of feeding the world.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We definitely do share the concerns of the American people when it comes to the price of eggs. However, good news.
Speaking to reporters, White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt.
The average cost of a dozen eggs is actually down since Secretary Rawlins and President Trump announced their plan. It's down $1.85. So that's good news on the cost of eggs. And as we know, under the Biden administration, egg prices went up 22%. This is another example of an economic mess that President Trump inherited. And the Secretary of Agriculture and the President are focused on fixing it. Secretary Rawlins put out a four-point plan, to address this crisis. And she has been honest and realistic with the American people, as this administration always is. It will take about 3 to 6 months to get the egg supply back to where it should be. But she's focused, and this administration is focused on doing that every day.